Mental Health Monday on Radio City Talk.
Radio City Talk.
We're going to speak now to an organisation on this programme that we first met in episode 48 of Mental Health Monday. They're back again to tell us about the work that they are doing. They are the team behind Paul's Place. Let's welcome Kathy, Joe and Agnes to the studio. Guys, thank you all for your time. Thanks for coming in. Great to see you all again. And we've been talking a lot about the work you've been doing on the programme because, of course, people will know the recent gig at the O2 Academy, the Talk Tonight event was held and celebrating in your name, fundraising in your name as well. Joe, Paul's Place, there's kind of dual Pauls involved in this one as well. For people who don't know your story, can you just share us a little bit about Paul and why your Paul has his name above Paul's Place?
Yeah, we lost our son Paul Williams in 2015 after a severe bout of depression. My daughter could see that we were struggling afterwards, and she looked around for somewhere to go, and there was nowhere really for anyone to go who'd been in this position. She contacted Kathy at Beacon Council and Trust, and from that conversation, coincidentally, on the day that we actually, my daughter contacted her, was Kathy's brother, Paul Jensen. He'd also took his life 23 years previous. It was his anniversary, so it was very poignant to her that on that day that someone would be contacting saying, is there any help out there for people who've lost someone by suicide? So Kathy invited us in and they offered us counselling, and we can only say that since that day, I mean, it's been a godsend to us. It really has been a lifeline. And we, after a fundraiser in February 2017, we gave the money from that fundraiser to Beacon as a thank you. And Kathy come up with the idea that something that she'd always wanted to do for many years but hasn't been able to, she wanted to launch some kind of a service that would be there for people who'd lost people by suicide. So she asked us would we get on board with it, with the idea, and we said of course we would. And we launched Paul's Place on the 13th of October in 2017 with the idea of we would help in the first 12 months 40 people. We're just over 12 months now, and I think we're up to 90 people who have accessed the service.
And that's incredible, and it's kind of that dual thing where it's obviously tragic that you've had to be so busy, but actually, maybe Agnes, there 90 people who otherwise would have been looking around thinking, there's nobody here for me. Yes. There is something there for them, and it's due to the hard work that you guys have put in.
Exactly, yeah. You know, as Joe said, it's a club that nobody really wants to belong to. But unfortunately, for myself personally, I find that when you've lost somebody to suicide, you know, as you can imagine, your life is just turned upside down. I don't know what I expected, but I think part of me was like, you know, after that initial shock of what has happened, it's twofold really, because firstly, you're trying to cope with the fact that you've lost a loved one. Secondly, you're trying to get your head around of how you've lost that person. So it's almost like a double impact. And I suppose for me, I was expecting, you know, somebody is bound to contact me to offer me some kind of support. Surely, you know, being thrown into this and not know. And then to discover that, no, really, you have to make that initial thing. You have to make that move. You have to sort of seek out and search. And as Joe pointed out, you know, if it wasn't for our daughter Claire making that sort of initial thing, if it wasn't for her, you know, finding Beacon, if it wasn't for Beacon saying, yeah, come on board, I hate to think where Joe and I would be, you know. And from 12 months on from the launch, to think that 90 people have accessed the service without any sort of form of mega advertising or anything like that. Basically, a lot of it's been through word of mouth.
Sure.
Jake Mills, the Hub of Hope, and I know he's a friend of yours, Mick, and he, you know, he comes a lot on the radio here.
Friend is a strong word.
Yeah, I'm not having that. You know, he's a champion. He's a fantastic lad, Jake. And we're delighted that he's able to come on board. And, you know, we've had support and help, haven't we, Jake, which has been immense. So, you know, we're just so thankful for anybody, you know, yourself included, for giving us an opportunity to have a platform to be able to get the word out there that we exist and the work that we do.
Kathy, there's a line in your publicity where you say, there's no wrong door to come through to see Paul's place.
Yeah, I think that's so important with mental health. For us, you know, you just pick up the phone yourself. You can self-referral, a family can refer you in. We've had calls from GPs. Whatever way you want to refer in, that's okay. We won't turn anybody away. It's not a case saying, oh, you've got to go through A&E or you've got to go through GP. People need the service there and then. And there is no wrong door, absolutely not.
Tell us about the work, obviously, you were doing through Beacon Counselling Trust, the organisation, and then there's Paul's Place now becoming part of that. What are the differences between the two? How does Paul's Place sit differently to the work that you do?
The main programme that we're funded for is that we support people who have got a problem with gambling and anybody affected by somebody else's gambling. So we're fully funded for that programme. Obviously, like Joe's explained, the personal reasons I've always wanted to get involved with the actual Paul's Place suicide bereavement is because of my own loss of my brother. But the ironic thing is there's such a big link because so many people that access the problematic gambling programme, what we're finding now is a lot of the affected others have actually been affected by a suicide. So there's link there. There's, you know, some research that needs to be looked into that as well. So there's high suicidal ideation with problematic gamblers. So we know that. But the suicide part of it, the postvention, the Paul's Place, what we're working on, we're obviously seeing that there's a link there as well. Many people who are coming through the Paul's Place programme who have lost somebody to suicide, there have been gambling problems as well. So in a way that we didn't expect it to come out, this is something that is coming out of it as well.
Joe, what do people say to you? Obviously, don't give away, you know, personal information when I ask this, but what do people say to you when they sit down with you maybe for that first time where they're looking for, I don't know, I guess they're looking for answers, they're looking for an explanation as to what's going on. And you're not a doctor, you're not a clinician, but you've had an experience which they can relate to. So how do they interact with you?
You find that when you've lost someone to suicide, it's a different kind of bereavement to losing someone to, say, you know, an illness or an accident or something. So the first thing you're doing is you can understand that they'll have lots of thoughts, they'll have lots of if onlys and maybes, and I should have said this, I should have done that. And you're carrying this all the time. It's like a torture wheel going round in your head all of the time. And they're the kind of things that you can associate with a normal bereavement. You miss that person. It hurts. It's just, you know, I'm not taking anything away from someone who's lost someone to an illness or something. But with suicide, it's all these questions that are constantly going on. So you can sort of know exactly what they're going through at that point.
Those feelings of, if it's grief, if it's anger, frustration, absolute sadness, I guess all of those things are kind of on the table when it comes to the situation that people find themselves in. Do people ever find themselves feeling sort of guilty about having those feelings? Is that part of it? It's sort of them trying to get to grips with their own feelings about the situation they found themselves in?
I think a lot of the time I wouldn't say it was guilt. I think it's they don't understand why they're having those feelings. That they think, we talked to quite a few people who think that it's unique to them, that these feelings and these thoughts that they're having, it's just them. But it's only when they talk to other people who've gone through the same experience that they realise they're not alone and they're not the only person who has these thoughts and feelings.
What does that look like, Agnes, when somebody has that moment of realisation that they're having an experience, although unique to them, a shared experience in people in different situations or with different individuals?
I think a lot of people are relieved when they sort of sit down with you and they open up to you, you know, about how they're feeling, because obviously through the only other organisation that really Joe and I have accessed other than Paul's Place with Beacon Council and Trust has been SOBS, which is Survivors of Bereavement by Suicide, which is a support group. I must admit, a lot of people who have come through SOBS and still go to SOBS are also now accessing Paul's Place as well, because some people feel the group session is good, but they also need that one-to-one. And that's absolutely fine. But I do firmly believe that, you know, we're all on that journey, but we're all at different stages on that journey. So we never look on it from our own point of view as being inspirational, really, to anyone. And yet people keep saying, you know, oh, it's fantastic and the work that you're doing, you're an inspiration to us. And we think, well, you know, we're still sort of having our own sort of days, aren't we? You know, mm-hmm. let's face it. I mean, it's 3 years on. There's no quick fix, and it's not something you'll ever get over. You know, it's with you all the time. It's just that you grow as a person around what's happened to you, I think. And I just think it's really important that people who find themselves in that position, you know, unfortunate position that we're in, is that they reach out. And I always say to people when I recommend Paul's Places that at the most you're given an hour of your time for something that could be so, so beneficial to you. So give it a try.
But I think the thing as well, and, you know, I'll say something nice here to you, but you know, this thing about being the inspiration, that I think for a lot of people, they'll be thinking, is there any help for me? I'm reaching out for help here. Am I going to find it? And you guys obviously found it through Kathy, and she was there to grab your hand.
Oh, yeah.
And now as a group, now you turn and you face people coming towards you, and they're looking and they're thinking, right, what is there? And they reach out and they might grab your hand. They might be Beacon, it might be Paul's Place. Then yeah. suddenly those people who then go, well, actually, have you heard about Paul's Place? That's when it becomes, yeah. and it becomes a little bit of a web
yeah,
of help that otherwise people thought, I thought there was nothing, but it turns out, here's Agnes, here's Joe, here's Kathy, here's Paul's Place. Have you heard about Paul's Place? They do X, yeah. Y, and Z. Have you heard about subs? And suddenly there's nothing there to, there's something there
yeah.
for
yeah.
people, which I think, you know, if people are going through that circumstance, to think there's going to be nothing there for me, or why has nobody called? Why has nobody, you know, picked up a phone to me? And then for someone to say, actually, this organisation do this and it's run by these people, mm-hmm. That must be an incredible moment for people to think, oh, right, I'm not on my own in this one.
Yeah.
I can find, there's a pathway for me here. And it's a pathway which I can go down within my local community with a shared experience with other people as well, which is why I think, that's me saying why I think that you're an inspiration to people. We've got the team behind Paul's Place on the programme, Kathy, Joe and Agnes, Joe and Agnes Williams, Kathy Devlin for Beacon Counselling Trust as well. Paul's Place have got a great website. I'll give you all the details about that. Can I ask you about the kind of help that you offer to people? I guess if you have sort of group events or one-to-ones as well, and I guess you've experienced this yourself. Do you find that people are thinking, well, the group work was fine last week, but this week I feel I need one-to-one. I don't want to have a one-to-one this week. I'd rather be doing something in a group. I'd rather be doing something outside, maybe. Do people have different needs about what they feel is right for them as they go on that bereavement journey?
Yes. I mean, sometimes one-to-one isn't for everyone. Sometimes group sessions is not for everyone. You have to find your own niche. Some people do both. So we have, obviously through Kathy, they have the one-to-one counselling at Paul's Place. But also me and Agnes are running a drop-in session on a Tuesday. And that's for people who are accessing Paul's Place but just need that little bit extra. So we just meet up and we talk about lots of different things. A lot of the subject will cover, yes, suicide and how you feel at that particular time. And they just need that extra time to just be able to sit down with people who understand and can just have a chat, because sometimes they find it very difficult to talk even within their own family, because as we found ourselves, there could be a day where I'm feeling down but Agnes is feeling quite bright, you know, she's not too bad, so I look at her and I think I can't say nothing now because I will drag her down to my level or vice versa. So you're reluctant to do that in that situation. But when you go to the counselling, it's basically the counsellor's there and they're saying, give it to me. I'll take it all off your shoulders, all these thoughts, these emotions that you're having. Give them to me.
And people who do the group work that don't feel like they want to talk, do they sort of take solace from listening? Can listening also be part of the issue?
Yeah, sometimes people will come to a group session, say, as we've said, we go to SOBS, and sometimes they won't say a word, but they'll sit and they'll listen. And sometimes just like things that other people are saying, experiences that they've had, thoughts that they've had, they're picking up on that and going, oh, right. So you've had those same thoughts as I'm having. They might necessarily feel confident enough to actually speak out and say something, but they're still getting something from the group session.
He wants to pick up on this one as well, because the talk tonight, lads, we're in the studio. Really great value. And a group of football fans in the main, music fans as well, who found themselves, Agnes, in a position where they had been bereaved by suicide, yeah. and between them were looking around and thinking, what can we do? And they turned to music and they thought, well, we can do a fundraising night. Who can we fundraise for? Two local organisations, James's Place and Paul's Place. When did you first get wind that they wanted to support the organisation?
I think it was via Kathy. Kathy first got the contact.
Yeah, I got a phone call from one of Yod Hughes's friends, and he said he was going to put me in touch with Chris. They'd lost a friend of theirs, Mick, and they wanted to do a fundraising event, and it just went from there. I think I got the phone call on the Wednesday, and they came in and met the three of us on the Friday. Said we'll have a quick 20-minute chat, and 2 hours later, you know, we went from there, and it was just absolutely fabulous, the night that they put on. Unbelievable. And there were lads that were, you know, in the throes of that real bereavement, and often I think friends are forgotten in this. Families, yeah, we all accept that the families need the support, but friends, you know, your friends can be closer to you than your family a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. So these lads were just reaching out, and that the work they did and the concert was absolutely fantastic.
It really struck me when I met them about the impact of Mick Woodburn. People will know the name. Yeah. Neil Yozza Hughes, who died as well. It really struck me that their death had a profound impact upon them. You know, we had the team in, one of the performers in the studio, John Gibbons, who compared on the night, and Chris Tiz, as people will know him as well. And it was interesting to see them realise how big an issue this was, and even though they were going through their own personal bereavement in regard to it, that they were thinking, actually, this is us, this is, you know, this is a group of us, these are lads who go to the match, this could be someone else next, we need to do something about it. And that's quite a mature attitude to take, isn't it?
Yeah, it was brilliant, you know, that they decided to sort of do something actively and try and, you know, raise some funds. And within 3 weeks, I mean, what a night they put on. It was just fantastic.
Amazing.
But it is brilliant that, you know, when people come together, they can move mountains. They really can. And, you know, that night was fantastic, and so many people turned up. It was a real success.
In terms of funding, you don't get any sort of government funding or NHS funding or anything like that. You're fundraising yourselves all the time. You've got the I'm Fundraising for Paul's Place t-shirts on it as we speak. I'm sure someone stops you in the street, you'll take a fiver off them.
You will.
But what does that money get spent on? What does that money, when that money arrives to you, then what might you spend it on?
100% goes to providing counselling services for people who've lost someone to suicide. It all goes to that. It costs on average per person who accesses the service £1,000. So, you know, that's why we have to keep fundraising all the time. You know, it'd be fantastic. I mean, in Liverpool and surrounding areas, we've got some really big companies. If we got 10 or 20 companies to give us, I don't know, 10, 20K a year, the things we could do with that would be absolutely amazing, you know. But it's trying to get companies on board. I know we're all having our problems today with austerity and everything else, but I'm sure that they could do that, they could, if they wanted to.
We're really proud of the way, you know, the fundraising goes, because we know we're doing a good job, for the fact that the people that are accessing it, so many of them come back and say, you know, we've done this night, or a young girl came in last week with £100 she'd raised doing a cake sale. Another, one of the dads that, you know, he accesses Paul's Place, he did a charity boxing match. It's everything like that. So, you know, £10, £100, £1,000, it doesn't matter. It all goes in the pot. You know, we've not got, you know, big plush surroundings or anything like that. We opened our group room. We could do that at the end of June. Second-hand chairs, but you know what? It's a lovely feel to the room, and we've got it just right. And when people come in and they say, oh, what a lovely feel, because the thing is, they're there to sit and talk and get the support, and that's what they're getting.
I mean, Agnes, I'm sure you wouldn't turn down, you know, a big conglomeration to offer you lots of cash, but there must be some, enjoyment that you take from receiving cash from the local community.
Oh, it's very rewarding.
From people who go, yeah, absolutely, we want to support, because that means that you're on people's minds and people are talking about you.
Yeah. And that matters so much. I mean, you know, at any given opportunity when we, you know, when we're talking and we're asked about the funding of it, yeah, by all means, by God, we'd love, you know, somebody to come along and just give us a blank cheque and relieve the pressure. But I still say, in all of that, Mick, it wouldn't stop us from doing what we do in regards with the fundraising and what have you. I just think, I put it on Twitter over the O2 night the other day, that, you know, as Scousers, you know, it's within you. You're a doer, especially if you think, like, you know, there's any injustice done or anything like that. If somebody else isn't doing it for you, you don't sit back and you don't just accept it. You get up and you do what has to be done. And I just think, personally speaking, even from the people that we've got who are accessing the service now, so many people in such a short space of time have come together voluntary and said, is there anything I can do, you know, or in my workplace, you know, I realise that, you know, you don't get any funding, you know, my workplace can do like price matching or, you know, if we do something like that. These are people who are, you know, in such a terrible, absolutely, you know, in a terrible state, a terrible place at that time to what's happened to them. And yet there they are saying, can we come on board? Can we help? We'll do whatever it takes. So, yeah.
It's Radio City Talk. We've got Joe and Agnes Williams, Kathy Devlin in the studio from Paul's Place. You hinted there about the sort of type of people who might interact with you. Kathy, what do victims of or victims of suicide from a family point of view, those who are bereaved by suicide, what do they look like? Are they young? Are they old? Are they different? When they come through your door, can they be absolutely anybody?
Absolutely anybody. You know, it touches everybody. You know, the people I see, I do the initial assessment. So I'm seeing, you know, mums, dads, brothers, sisters, friends, you know, whatever the relation may be. And, you know, some people can't speak when they come through the door. They're absolutely in tears. And I probably just talk with them at first. And then we maybe say, try the drop-in, talk to Joe and Agnes, somebody who's been there. Let's get you on the one-to-one. The most rewarding thing is after, you know, so many weeks even, when you see that same person sitting in the waiting room for their appointment and you go over, give them a big hug and they'll say, how are you? Oh, you know, I'm not too bad. They can even speak. And I know that sounds ridiculous, but that's how people come in, how people sometimes present. There's no stereotype of who will come through that door. Absolutely not.
I guess the reason I ask that, Joe, is because, you know, people might think, oh, is this a service for me, or I'm a bit older, so maybe I should, or I'm younger, so maybe I need. But actually, from what you're saying, it affects people in such a specific way, suicide bereavement, that actually anybody can come forward, anybody can reach out.
Yeah, anybody at all, any walk of life, rich or poor, it doesn't matter, it can hit anybody. And our doors are open to anyone, different ages, it doesn't matter. We're there to help as much as we can. I mean, as you know, I'm not an expert, I've been through it, yeah. I'm an expert in that side, but I'll talk to anyone who comes through the doors, and say anything I say, if it gives them hope or help or any kind, then, you know, I feel I've done a good job, you know. So
I guess, you know, you say you're not an expert, but, you know, people would say you're a world-class professor in this stuff now because of your own personal experience and their own lived experience. Do you find, though, that through the work that you do, that people sometimes look for more than, obviously, the bereavement counsellor? Do you find yourself being a bit of a social worker? Do people then talk about other issues that maybe have sort of existed in their life, maybe focused on that suicide or problems which existed as a result of the suicide, that you find yourself being a bit of a Mr. Fix-It?
Yeah, well, you try to be, yeah, because of the circumstances of some people, yet it can affect their lives in different ways, not only because they've lost somebody to suicide, but it can financially, obviously, it can hit them. They may have a house that they're trying to pay for. It can affect the job sometimes, because sometimes the job they do involves maybe talking to people who are feeling suicidal. So they feel that they can no longer do that job. So it can have a massive effect on somebody's life, not only with the loss of that person, but in their own sort of personal life afterwards. We know of circumstances like that, and it's tragic. And there's nothing out there to help these people where they could actually not only lose their job, they've lost a partner or, you know, whoever it be. They could also end up losing the house, the job. What can you do with those kind of people? I mean, there's not a lot really we can do, but we would love to be able to see that there's help, but again, there's no help for someone in those circumstances.
Yeah, and Agnes, I get your take on this, but Kathy, you're kind of the expert in this as well. I guess when people have got bereavement, the issue of grief and long-term grief as well, if it does spiral into those other issues about work, paying for the mortgage, dealing with that, presumably that can lead on to other long-term mental health conditions, depression, stresses and anxiety as well.
Absolutely,
if not dealt with, you know, at source, can become, you know, much more damaging in the long term.
Definitely. So we're dealing with the bereavement, but like Joe says, it's these environmental issues as well. So this is something that we have recognised just through our work in this first 12 months. We need some sort of advocacy worker or something. We need to be able to fund some sort of worker, like a citizen's advice or something like that, because we realise that there are these problems. We've been involved with people doing like their PIP assessments, you know, writing letters and saying the situation that they're in, but there's only so far that we can go because we're not experts in that field. But that is a huge gap that we need to look at in the service, definitely.
Agnes, I guess that gives people the impression, you know, of the work that you do, but also that the wider work that almost needs to support the work that you do.
Yeah, it really does. I know, speaking from our own experience, neither Joe nor I went back to our jobs that we had before we lost Paul. And I say I admire people. I don't know whether admire is the right word, but, you know, you look around and you think, obviously, people's circumstances financially are entirely different as well. But, you know, to think that you've lost a loved one to suicide, your workplace is saying to you, you know, oh, when do you think you'll be coming back? You know, when are you going to be okay? Is, you know, how long's a piece of string? But, you know,
a genuine question? When are you going to be okay?
Well, you know, I do feel, you know, personal experience, you know, I had like sort of group sessions or one-to-one sessions, shall we say, like a catch-up just to see where we're at. Well, yeah, you go for those because you have to, and it's part and parcel of, you know, being employed by somebody. And you say, you know, I was honest and said, well, I'm no further on. I understand from your point of view, you as a company can't keep my job open forever, but I can't honestly sit here and say to you, yeah, I'm going to be okay to come back, and I can give 100% because there's no 2 days alike. And, you know, that goes on. It's over three years for us now. There's more good days than bad days, I'll say, in a week, but you could have a run of 3 or 4 days and think, oh, you know what, I'm really great. And then that fifth day could be that day where you just don't want to face the world. You just want to curl up under the covers and stay there all day. So, you know, it's really difficult, yeah.
In terms of those, the 40 that you aim to help, and you so far 90 and beyond, for those people who, I'm not saying who came in on day one, but those people who maybe have been accessing the service, accessing Paul's Place for a part of that year, what do you see the difference being in them? Do you notice, or could you say, I remember what you were like when you came in versus what you look like now? What might that journey look like for somebody?
Well, we do notice a big difference in people, and that's part of the reward that we get of helping out with the drop-in service that we do. Because as Cathy says, sometimes people, when they first come through the door, they can't talk. They're just caught up in the grief and, they can't do anything. But over time of having the one-to-one counselling, we see the improvements in them. And there was a little story that Cathy told where we had the group room that we have for the drop-in sessions. Cathy was leading out of the building, and they could hear the laughter coming out of the room, and asked, what's that? What's going on there? She said, oh, that's our suicide bereavement drop-in session.
And there's sort of knocking on.
You sure? Yeah, so,
you know, like music to my ears. But
yeah, it gives you permission, you know, as I say, when you get to a certain stage where you can laugh again. You know, but there are times when we're in that room, and yeah, we cry as well. Mm-hmm. But you can give yourself, because you're amongst people who understand, permission. You give yourself that permission to laugh again.
What are you doing next from a fundraising point of view? Just to keep you on your toes, Agnes.
Well, I don't think anything this year in particular is going to match last Friday's night's gig at the O2. But our next one will be Saturday the 24th of November between 12 and 3 at our office at Beacon Council and Trust. And we're going to be having a Christmas fair. Christmas goods for sale. We're going to have tea and coffee, refreshments, and a chance for people to see the wonderful work that goes on at Beacon. Yeah.
Is Joe going to dress up as Father Christmas?
Well, Absolutely. That's debatable, Mike.
I'm losing weight. I'm not putting it on.
That's happening this, on the 24th of November. Let's get the
Saturday
date
right. 24th. Yeah.
The Christmas fair, and that's at the offices. Where?
Townsend Lane. Yeah,
that's Beacon. The best way of doing it. Beacon and Paul's Place. Thank you so much, guys, for your time today. It's good to hear about the work that you're doing. It's good to hear that more people are accessing you, even though they're accessing you for tragic means, because of tragic means. We appreciate absolutely the hard work you've put into it as well. It'll be great to have another catch up soon in regards to the work that you're doing. And those numbers are incredible, about the people you've been helping and supporting as well, to Paul's Place. Loads of information on social media about Paul's Place as well. I'll just mention the website through the beaconcounsellingtrust.co.uk page. There's a Paul's Place page too there as well. We mentioned as well the gambling counselling as well. There's a link to that on that as well. We'll get all the other details up through our social media at Radio City Talk. Joanne, thank you for your time. Kathy, thank you for your time too.
Mental Health Monday with Mick Coyle.
Radio City Talk.